Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Friday, July 19th. I'm Tanya Horlick reporting for KMUD. In today's news, Sanctuary Forest offers new botanical hike for children Saturday. Epic celebrates latest court victory at Richardson Grove Rendezvous on Sunday. And brush fire on Mad River Beach contained early Friday morning. Stay tuned. News on these stories and more coming right up. Sanctuary Forest is a land and water trust whose mission is to, quote, conserve the Mattole River watershed and surrounding areas for wildlife habitat and aesthetic, spiritual, and intrinsic values in cooperation with our diverse community, end quote. On Saturday, July 20th, Sanctuary Forest will host an easy hike for children ages 3 to 6 and their families to learn about native plants, aquatic animals, and restoration work while they can play in the Mattole River. The free hike program will include plant identification, a study of macro aquatic invertebrates, and other hands-on activities. April Newlander has been with Sanctuary Forest since 2015 and serves as their executive director. Newlander described the free hike for kids, led by Eric and Victoria Schaefer, this Saturday morning along the Mattole River.
We have done a couple of kids hikes in the past, but hadn't done them for several years. I have a seven-year-old, and now my son will be four next month. And while I thought all of our hikes were really great, I thought they didn't really target children. And so we have been excited to bring kids and their families out to educate kids. And what we're going to be doing on Saturday is meeting at the Whitethorn School at 10 a.m. and we take a little hike through a redwood forest down to the river. So it's really neat to see the kids kind of in awe about the really large redwood trees in the forest, and they all get a chance to join hands and hug the tree, and then we go down to the river. They get to learn about the salmon that are oversummering in the Mattole River and how important it is to have water in the streams for them, because they need that habitat to get big and fat so they can go back out to the ocean to swim. And so what we usually do is go down there, and Eric and Victoria Schaefer, who are our board members and also retired teachers from Whitethorn School, like to tell the kids to not throw any rocks in, to be really quiet, so when you first kind of walk up to the water's edge, you can sometimes see the little fish swimming around, and it's really special. The kids make a connection with that, and during this time of the year, the river is getting kind of low, so it is, you get to kind of see how little water is available in the river.
Newlander recommends bringing decent shoes, water, a packed lunch, mosquito deterrents, and hats. Swimsuits and towels are encouraged for those who would like to swim. Sanctuary Forest monitors the flow of water on the Mattole River. Newlander shared what has been observed on the Mattole this year.
You know, we got, I think it was about 8 inches of rain in May, which really has helped the flow. It is starting to get lower. The main stem in the Mattole still is, I don't know the gallons per minute, but we're not entered into forbearance because we do stream flow monitoring, and we inform the residents when the water gets too low to not take any more water out of this out of the river. And so it's doing better than it has in past years, I think, a little bit. But one thing that's really important to remember is we don't rely on snowmelt in the Mattole River, so it's very flashy, and spring rains are what matter the most. So late spring rains, the more late spring rains that we get, is more important to maintaining that flow. And what has been happening with climate change is we have a much longer dry season that goes into, I mean, last year, I remember it was almost Thanksgiving that there was fires going and everybody's waiting for the rain. And so the later spring rains that we get the more that that's sustained later in the summer. But it gets really dire in like September and October where things start drying up. And that's why we try to do a lot of education with landowners about, again, not pumping from the river when the fish need it most. And so a lot of residents here in the Mattole Valley do practice storage and forbearance. They have water tanks, ponds, various ways to store water during the winter when there's a lot of water, and then being able to forbear from taking water in the creeks.
Sanctuary Forests' Water Forbearance Program is funded through grants from the Department of Water Resources and the Department of Fish and Wildlife, which help provide 50,000 gallons of water storage for landowners who agree not to store water during low river flows. Newlander described how anyone can see who is a part of Sanctuary Forests' Water Forbearance Program.
It is really amazing. As people drive out through the town of Whitethorn, there's bluefish, little cutouts of bluefish that people put at the end of their gate, and that is a demonstration that they're practicing storage and forbearance. And we started giving those bluefish to people that were in the grant funding program, and a lot of neighbors were seeing them, and people wanted the bluefish. And so we've begun to extend those to people that do voluntarily practice storage and forbearance. So it has been a great outreach tool and, like you said, inspiring your neighbors. And then we also, like I said, we monitor the stream flow, so we keep a sign up at the Whitethorn Junction that informs residents of the flow, has a fish on the poster. So if the water level drops and you start to see the fish out of water, it really has amazing results. It's such a good outreach tool. We've had people come in and ask what they can do when they're running out of water and they want to help.
Sanctuary Forest has been working for 3 years to protect the Van Arken watershed as a conservation easement. Because of generous contributions to the preservation effort, Sanctuary Forest is now nearing completion of the Van Arken project.
Things did change a little bit, the structure of the project. It was going to be, we were trying to buy it in fee title, which means that we would own the property. But since we weren't able to come up with the money in the time frame that the landowner was wanting to sell, we have since transitioned into a conservation easement project. So we're talking to a conservation buyer who is interested in buying the whole Van Arken watershed, and then we would buy a conservation easement from them. And they are very supportive of all the same objectives that we initially had with the Van Arken project, which is doing sustainable forestry to restore forest health. A lot of the Van Arken watershed has been previously clear cut, 50, 70 years ago. So there's a lot of kind of dense monoculture plantation type forests out there that need to be thinned to restore forest health. And then there's a lot of really beautiful intact, like mixed hardwood forests that we want to be able to preserve as for conservation values.
Over time, Newlander hopes to develop a public access community forest in the Van Arken Conservation Area.
And then another really interesting aspect of the project was the community forest part and being able to open it up for public access, for low-impact recreation, and also educational purposes. And so that probably won't happen right away, but it is in the goals. An easement runs with the land forever, so we're going to include in the easement that we have the right to develop a community forest and public access, like I said, limited public access and educational opportunities.
Sanctuary Forest has recently received quite a bit of financial support for the Van Arken project, which may ensure its success.
We also, since we started with the conservation easement project, we've gotten $1.5 million from the Wildlife Conservation Board Climate Adaptation and Resiliency Program, and then we just recently got $1.85 million from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife Proposition 1 Streamflow Enhancement Project, program. So together with all those funds, the foundation funds I was talking about, the public support, we're pretty much in a very good position to buy the conservation easement. So it's been very exciting, and I just want to thank all of our supporters out there because we've received a tremendous amount of community support, support throughout the Bay Area from a lot of our long-term supporters, and it's really just been amazing.
Executive Director April Newlander believes the preservation of forests like Van Arken will reduce global carbon levels and improve the health of local ecosystems.
You know, we're just in a unique position in this area to conserve these forests that, like I said, you know, redwoods sequester more carbon than any other tree on the planet. So they're so important to conserve and protect these forests. The Mattole Watershed is on the southernmost edge of the temperate rainforest, and so it's a very important ecosystem. And again, with climate changes, we're seeing, you know, we still get a lot of rain in the winter, but again, we have these longer dry seasons, which is contributing to the streams drying up, less fish habitat. You know, all the cimonid species are listed as threatened, and so it's important to try to restore that habitat and recover those species. And another really important reason is for wildlife and keeping lands, conservation lands, from becoming fragmented.
The free hike for young children this Saturday, July 20th, will commence at 10 a.m. at the Whitethorn Elementary School on Bryslyn Thorn Road. For more information about Sanctuary Forest's hike program and conservation efforts, you can call 707-986-1087 or visit their website, sanctuaryforest.org. Richardson Grove State Park, where tourists often first encounter large redwoods when heading north on Highway 101, is home to one of the last protected stands of accessible old-growth redwood trees in the world. The park is a central habitat for threatened and endangered species. Caltrans first proposed a road widening project through Richardson Grove in 2007 to accommodate large truck travel. Litigation has been repeatedly brought against Caltrans for its proposal to widen narrow parts of Highway 101 through the contiguous old-growth forest. Tom Wheeler is serving his second year as the executive director of the Environmental Protection Information Center, also known as EPIC. Wheeler spoke about the plaintiff's recent victory in a federal court against Caltrans.
The judge found that Caltrans had failed to analyze a lot of potential impacts to redwoods. And so this has been something that we've been saying for the entirety of our litigation. You know, we've been filing lawsuits to protect Richardson Grove State Park for 9 years. And the entire time we've said that Caltrans has failed to adequately look at the risks that the project would present to the old-growth redwoods of the state park. And the judge fundamentally agreed with us and came up with four ways that the project failed to take a hard look at those potential impacts. We were pushing the judge for an elongated environmental review to do a full-blown environmental impact statement under federal law. And the judge ultimately sided with us and has forced the agency now, if they want to proceed, to do this very costly, long, and detailed environmental impact statement. So we are thrilled at that result, and hopefully it will put a wrench in Caltrans's cogs and will maybe cause them to reevaluate the project in total.
Plaintiffs in lawsuits against Caltrans include EPIC, the Center for Biological Diversity, Californians for Alternatives to Toxics, Friends of Del Norte, and four private citizens. In June, Judge Kelly Neal of the Humboldt County Superior Court decided that Caltrans violated the California Environmental Quality Act, or CEQA, by introducing significant new information without a period of public comment.
In particular, this report from a tree specialist, an arborist, about how the project could impact the old growth of the state park. And the public never had an opportunity to comment on this significant new information, which the judge found to be a violation of CEQA. And so the judge there ordered Caltrans to go back under state law and reopen a public comment period for us so that we'd be able to comment on this significant new information.
Wheeler explained how the environmental impact studies completed by Caltrans were insufficient evidence that the old-growth forest would be protected.
The judge also found that the agency failed to look at the impacts that paving over old-growth redwood roots would have on the ability of the roots to receive oxygen from the soil. And roots are just like any other part of a tree. They need oxygen. They're alive and kind of breathe. And if you cut off too much oxygen, then you can result in root rot and kill the tree. And so the judge said, you know, look, you've recognized this as a potential threat, but you've never actually analyzed this risk. So your analysis is faulty here. And so this is great. These have been concerns of ours for a long time, and these have been concerns that have been blown off by the agency. So it was really refreshing and nice to have a judge so clearly find in our favor and kind of justify all of the concerns that we've had. I'm glad that Judge Alsup, the federal court judge, really took this case seriously and really dove deep into the record to understand why the agency was failing.
EPIC supports the preservation of old-growth forests.
We have only 5% of our historic old-growth redwoods left. These are the most interesting forests on the planet, in my opinion. These ancient, old, dark, damp, wet forests. They are hotbeds of biodiversity. And we are missing them. We only have 5% left. So each tree, each acre is incredibly precious, and we can't risk harming them for silly or insubstantial reasons. And these old-growth redwoods also are home to some of our iconic endangered species here on the North Coast. So we have northern spotted owls and marble murrelets and coho salmon. All of these species call old-growth redwoods home. And so this project is one of many that potentially threaten old-growth redwoods. And so EPIC, since our founding in 1977, has been devoted to protecting some of our last remaining stands. These are areas that are too precious to just give up.
EPIC's executive director, Tom Wheeler, described how the public can submit their comments about Caltrans' Richardson Grove project.
You can always write to Matt Brady. He is the Region 1 District Director here at Caltrans, and let him know that you think it's time that the agency pulled the plug on this project. The more that Matt Brady hears from us, the more that our Board of Supervisors hears from us, the better.
This Sunday, July 21st, EPIC will be hosting a potluck in Richardson Grove State Park.
This Sunday, from 12 to 4, we are celebrating these victories and celebrating all the friendships that we've made in defending Richardson Grove State Park with a celebration down at the river. So it's going to be a potluck. Bring your bathing suit, bring a friend, bring a dish to share. We're going to be in the day use area at Richardson Grove State Park from 12 to 4. And we'd love for K-Mud listeners and defenders of the Grove to come and join us.
Visitors to Richardson Grove must bring cash entry fees for each vehicle. The potluck gathering will be held for free at the day-use picnic area of Richardson Grove from noon to 4 p.m., in between the South Fork Eel River and some of the tallest trees in the world. Everyone is invited and carpools are encouraged. You can find more about Sunday's gathering online on the Facebook event page, Richardson Grove Rendezvous. For more information about EPIC's ongoing work, or to donate to their cause, you can visit their website at wildcalifornia.org. CAL FIRE Press Information Officer Paul Savona confirmed the Pequon fire is fully controlled and should be 100% contained today, July 19th, at a total of 3 1/4 acres. Crews have been cooling hot spots and ensuring containment for a couple days. Last night, a fast-moving vegetation fire started at Mad River Beach County Park. The cause is under investigation, however. Illegal fireworks were seen in the area. Arcata Fire Chief Justin McDonald shared details.
Yeah, shortly after 9:30 last night, we got a report of a possible vegetation fire out at the Mad River Beach, where the boat launch is on the county park area. As our units started to respond out, dispatch advised that they were getting multiple calls. So that's a clue that it's not just a bonfire out there, that it might actually be something. And once everybody got on the road, they could see a large glow and a big column of smoke coming out there. While we were en route, we noticed illegal fireworks being launched in the area, the ones that shoot up in the air. So we notified the sheriff to also respond out. When we got out there about 9:50, we didn't really have eyes on the fire, but we had a chief officer kind of up on the hill looking at it from School Road in McKinleyville, estimated at about 1 to 3 acres. It took quite a while to get out there. The fire was actually multiple spots. There was about 150-foot long by 50-foot spot fire. That was the closest, and that was about 2,000 feet away from the parking lot. So crews had to make access on foot, dragging the hose out there. And then the larger main fire was probably another 500 to 1,000 feet beyond that.
Shifting winds spread the flames from an estimated 1 to 3 acres when crews first arrived to an estimated 15 acres by the time the wildfire was contained.
Altogether, it was a pretty significant fire for, I think, our district for sure, and quite honestly for the county and at the beach. That's 15 acres is a pretty good burn. So we had crews out there last night till 4 o'clock, and I think all in all, they probably had about 5,000 feet of hose line on the ground to control it and used about 4,000 gallons of water. It was interesting in the evening how the wind shifts. While we were responding out, the smoke was actually blowing due south, which was good. It was kind of pushing the fire towards the parking lot where we were. However, as soon as the sun went down, the wind shifted and blew to the north, which is not so good because that meant the active fire front was burning north, and just, you know, kind of kept outpacing us. So as we worked our way out, extinguishing these spot fires on our way until we could get to the main fire, it was growing.
Forward progress was stopped at 1:50 a.m., and the fire was contained by 3:30 a.m. Friday morning. No structures were threatened. Arcata Fire received support from many other local departments and CAL FIRE.
We had assistance last night. All three of our fire engines and were out there. Fire agencies that were on scene besides us, Humboldt Bay Fire sent one engine. Blue Lake Fire sent a water tender. CAL FIRE sent two engines, a battalion chief, and a bulldozer. And then we were also working in conjunctions with County Parks and the Sheriff's Office. And then, because we always are prepared for the next thing, Samoa and Fieldbrook Fire were actually covering our stations all night until about 5 o'clock.
Although part of Mad River Beach still smolders, there will be no need to report smoke or fire. Mad River Road will be impacted by fire engine traffic for the next few days, and Arcata Fire requests the public avoid the area if possible.
Two of our on-duty engines are out there, and Blue Lake Fire is assisting. So today we can see where the smokes are still lingering, so we'll have crews out there probably every day for the next 3 or 4 days, just making sure that the hot spots are getting put out.
Arcata Fire Chief Justin McDonald emphasized that igniting illegal fireworks can cause wildfires and offered the public some words of caution.
I would start with don't be using illegal fireworks. Just before the 4th, we start chasing these fireworks that shoot through the air and then drop hot embers in the dry grass. And, so we've been chasing these fires on and off. And for those that live in the more rural areas, adequate fuel break around your house and keep your vegetation cleaned up. And that'll give us a fighting chance to make sure that the fire doesn't get to your, your house.
Across the Emerald Triangle, burn permits are being suspended in Humboldt, Del Norte, and Trinity counties beginning Monday, July 22nd. After another wet winter and above-average snowpack, warming temperatures and winds are quickly drying out the abundant annual grass crop. The increasing fire danger posed by the high volume of dead grass and hotter, drier conditions in the region is prompting CAL FIRE to suspend all burn permits for outdoor residential burning within the state responsibility area of Humboldt, Del Norte, and Western Trinity counties. This suspension takes place Monday, July 22nd, and bans all residential outdoor burning of landscape debris, such as branches and leaves. Since January 1, 2019, CAL FIRE and firefighters across the state have already responded to over 2,108 wildfires. CAL FIRE is asking residents to take the extra time to ensure that they are prepared for wildfires by maintaining a minimum of 100 feet of defensible space around every home and buildings on their property, and being prepared to evacuate if the time comes. Industrial-type burning may proceed if CAL FIRE officials inspect the burn site and issue a special permit. The suspension of burn permits for residential landscape debris does not apply to campfires within organized campgrounds or on private property. Campfires may be permitted if the campfire is maintained in such a manner as to prevent its spread to the wildland. A permit can be obtained at local fire stations or online at preventwildfireca.org, where you can find more ideas for how to be prepared. The City of Eureka will continue performing road construction work on Waterfront Drive from G Street to J Street on Monday, July 22nd through Saturday, July 27th. This work requires road closures for the length of construction. Work will typically be performed between the hours of 7 a.m. and 6 p.m. daily, weather permitting. Alternate routes are advised. The City of Eureka, quote, realizes that this disruption is an inconvenience, but the patience and cooperation of motorists, bicyclists, and pedestrians in the vicinity of the work is greatly appreciated. End quote. That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Michael McCaskill for engineering. KMUD News is online. You can find us on KMUD.org, SoundCloud, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. That's where you'll see stories, links, related documents, and videos. If you have questions or suggestions, just give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send us an email at news@kmud.org. Reporting from our studios in Redway, I'm Tanya Horlick.